Hello, I'm Janet Gallen, and I welcome you to Love Letters Live. And this is, as our regular listeners know, a presentation of a wonderful guest who has done something exceptional in life. And sometimes it's challenges, sometimes it's unexpected victories. But what it always is a reason for a love letter, because in every life situation, there are the seeds of a love letter. Somebody you might want to say thank you to, someone you haven't thought of for a long time, someone you want to apologize to for something, someone you want to just revive memories, or someone you want to express romance and lust and seduction. It doesn't matter. It's up to you. The nice thing about love letters is that with love letters, you're the boss. I'm going to go to our guest right now, Chelsea Torres, who is a San Franciscan. And tell us, like, where you grew up and how you came to this part of your life. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Denver, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I started to go to school there a while back. Mm-hmm. And decided I really wanted to go to an art school.
Oh.
So I applied to many different places, one of which was the San Francisco Art Institute.
Really? Didn't know that.
And at the time, I was with a person mm-hmm. who said, if I'm going to move away from Denver for you, I'd like to choose the spot. And he chose San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So that is why okay. I moved to San Francisco.
So are you still with him?
No, it was about 4 months uh-huh. into our move here that we parted ways.
And so that was a while ago already.
Yes, that was more than 6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So,
and that was okay with you? I mean, you're smiling. Was that?
It was very hard at the time.
I bet.
Because I didn't know anyone here. Mm-hmm. And we had come together.
So what did you do next? I mean, you're a student at school.
Yeah, so I just kept on. Actually, when we both moved here, we had no idea how to start ourselves in a new city. We were in, I think, 22 and with no real mm-hmm. support from our parents. Mm-hmm. So we lived in a youth hostel mm-hmm. for 4 months when I moved here. And it was a very intense situation. So as soon as this person left, I left the youth hostel and just...
Oh, so you found an apartment.
I found an apartment in the mm-hmm. neighborhood where my cafe is now.
Uh-huh.
And...
Tell us, okay, now that you've mentioned your cafe.
Okay.
Tell us about that. It's called?
It's called Little Bird Coffee House.
Little Bird Coffee House.
And it's on Geary Street mm-hmm. between Larkin and Hyde. Mm-hmm.
It is adorable, by the way. I was there.
In a neighborhood that people call the Tenderloin.
Yes.
And usually not in a particularly warm way.
Well, okay, so that's something you want to talk about because I read about you in the newspaper and you said you wanted people not to be afraid of the Tenderloin.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Well, I think one of the things that's been most profound for me in doing this for the last year or so has been that when I talk to other people, other San Franciscans even, they have this idea of the Tenderloin as this space that houses a lot of scary behavior, mm-hmm. drugs and
violence
and people living on the street and smelly gutters and all of these visions come up. But what never seems to come up is the neighborhood and the community there.
So what made you choose that? Let me back up for a minute. So you were in art school.
Uh-huh.
And what made you change? I mean, did you have a specialty in art, like painting or sculpting or drawing?
So
I
actually finished up school.
You did?
And still actively try to make work and be a part of that community. I did painting. I did everything. My major was actually called New Genres, mm-hmm. which is, in a nutshell, basically more concept and theory driven. Mm-hmm. And then from that point, you choose your media. So it's painting, drawing, video.
So how did you
everything.
Go from that into restaurant? What happened in your life to make that?
Well, so one of the things that happened along the way was that I got married and, my husband is a local business owner. Mm-hmm. He owns bars.
Okay. I'm going to spend the whole time backing up.
Yes.
Back up. So how did you meet him? I mean, this is nice for women to hear and for men to hear also. If you want to get a woman this absolutely adorable, I wish it were a television moment, maybe you'd like to learn how she how her sweetheart got her.
So there are lots of little stories here. So I actually met my husband in the Tenderloin, mm-hmm. because that was where my first apartment was. And there were no places for me to study in the nighttime because there were no coffee shops open late. So I would go into the only bar I knew I could go to where no one would bother me. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have to worry about having to...
Right. Get rid of people. Right. So what was the name? What is the name of it?
It's called Whiskey Thieves.
And is that his bar?
That is his bar. So I would go there and I could read and study and get my work done. And of course we met and he would tease me that, you know, who goes to a bar alone to read?
Really?
It doesn't make sense. But I said, you know, I want to be out and I have to get these things done. And this is a comfortable place for me to do it. So
okay, so that's who you married.
Yeah, so he just said, well, you look like you don't have friends, so I'll be your friend.
How nice.
That was his line. Okay,
that's very nice.
So, yes.
Now you have two children.
Yes, so we got married and we had two children. And while our children are happy to help out at the bar during the day when it's not open, it's mm-hmm. not a space where they can be. It's not, they can't even legally be in there
right.
when we're open. So we started to kind of fantasize about having a cafe a few years ago, you know, because it just seemed like a space that was more conducive to mm-hmm. raising a family. Mm-hmm. When this opportunity arose, basically the
space... You mean that space came open?
It came open uh-huh. and it shares the same apartment building as the bar. Mm-hmm. And we thought, well, it's kind of soon. I mean, this has been a fantasy, but is it the right time? And I was really nervous about it.
And now, what was nerve-wracking about it?
Well, I didn't go to business school. Mm-hmm. I went to art school. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about running a business except for having worked in cafes and restaurants basically my entire life.
What did you have to learn?
I didn't know. That's the scary part. I didn't know what I have to learn. So, and I looked at my husband and I said, Are you going to do this whether or not I'm ready? And he said, yeah, I want to do it. He has a very entrepreneurial
good for him
spirit.
And so you had him behind you.
He was supporting me mm-hmm. to do it. And I said, okay, if we do this, I want to do it. You already are running your business. Mm-hmm. That's what you spend your time. I want to do this. So I decided to do it.
So what's the first thing you do? You sign a lease.
Yeah,
and then you have to furnish it.
Right.
Was it just a blank, empty space?
Yes. The previous owners, it had been shut down for several months, and the previous owners had basically removed every piece. So it was figuring out, where do you get sinks? How many mm-hmm. sinks do you need? What mm-hmm. kind of sinks do you need? The permits, endless permits. And we basically put it together incredibly low budget. There are mm-hmm. chairs from my own living room in there.
Wonderful.
Tables that were given to us, chairs that were given to us, chairs from friends' garages that had been
so
sitting
that's
there.
Nice. That gives it that really homey kind of community right. feel. And did you get trade from the street right away from the neighborhood people came?
Yeah. It took a while for people to realize we were there because the space had been closed for so long. Mm-hmm. And I think you just get so used to walking by, you don't see what's
yes.
beside you. So, but people started to come in, and the other business owners came in and really welcomed me
How nice.
To the neighborhood. And that was just, I mean, there's a cafe right across the street.
Uh-huh.
He has a different sort of thing. He's got a lot of different foods, very good foods, I might say. Mm-hmm. And right away he came across the street and said, I know we're across the street from each other, but
oh, how nice.
I'm not into competition. And the way I see it, the more businesses in the neighborhood, the better for everybody.
Yes, if people start coming to a certain block to eat,
yeah.
and there's more. So you do coffee and pastries and sandwiches? How late are you open?
So for now, we're only open till 5.
It's a long day. What time do you open?
7 a.m.
That's a very long day.
It is. Yeah. It is. But I think I have this dream eventually of being a place that's open late for people to study.
Oh,
I like that.
Nice.
So,
yes.
But that's in the future. So,
yes.
So we do coffee.
So you need a couple of sofas in there or something.
Yeah, and, something yes. cozy. Uh-huh. You know, I like to have a bar alternative.
Yes.
No offense to my husband's business, but.
Well, you got
sometimes,
lucky.
Sometimes, yeah.
I mean, you got lucky to walk into a bar with your attitude and sweetness and gorgeous
Not
face
me.
That doesn't look like it's looking for trouble.
No, and it was, I think it's a good space. But I there's a lot of families in the Tenderloin. That's the other thing that people don't know is that there are more families in the Tenderloin than any other neighborhood. It's the most densely populated neighborhood, I think, in all of California.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so there are so many people living there, and it just seems like there needs to be more spaces where community can gather and bloom and all of that.
So you could even conceivably have high school kids or junior high school kids coming in there after school for a soda and studying.
I would love that.
Oh, that's really nice.
So, but we get there.
So let me ask you something else. What was the hardest thing you had to learn to do?
Oh.
Maybe there wasn't one hardest, but.
I don't know. It's all very, very hard. It's hard to owe people money. And when you open a business,
yes,
you have to owe people money.
Uh-huh.
You have to have bills and decide to pay one person or another. And that's really difficult.
And then catch up on yourself over time.
Yeah, because it's not big companies you're dealing with. I mean, there is PG&E and so on, but you're buying coffee from people that you know and you've shaken hands with
and they have to put braces on their children's teeth.
Exactly.
I mean, everybody needs to be paid.
Right. So that's hard. And then we've had to raise prices a couple times and it's hard, but I just look at my customers and I say, I wouldn't do this if I didn't have to do
it.
And they're really understanding. So that part's a little bit hard.
So you've really accomplished something. Now, you had a difficult moment. I know one of your difficult moments because that's what I read about in the paper. And I was so impressed with it in this world of acrimony and people just shooting from the hip and creating difficulty for each other. But you've already said the person across the street came to welcome you.
Right.
Which speaks so highly for that person.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Talk about, you wanted to put tables and chairs outside. Could you please tell us about this?
So when we opened, we applied for an outdoor seating permit with the Department of Public Works. And we were told it was a pretty simple process.
Uh-huh.
Just drew up a plan and went down and they checked off on it. We had to abide by certain guidelines, which we had.
Uh-huh.
And we put up a little sign that they posted on our window that if anyone had a reason to protest that they could and wait a few weeks. And
someone did.
And someone did.
What happened?
So we never received any response. So we figured we were in the clear.
Uh-huh.
And our obstacle was coming up with the money for the permit. So when we came up with the money, we went down to...
Permits are expensive?
They are in the scheme of everything else.
Uh-huh.
It's not the most expensive permit, but when you have to pay a million of these things. So coming up with the money, you have to pay, basically you rent the sidewalk and you have to pay the square footage that you're using. It makes sense.
Okay.
So I went down and I was really shocked to hear that someone had protested because as far as I knew, I had done everything within the guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very legal sounding letter, very sort of cold and
unyielding.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the thing that surprised me about it is a lot of the requests in it had already sort of been met by the things that we had submitted to the planning department. So right off, I'm sort of on my guard, you know, what I don't really understand what's being protested.
And you hadn't met the person.
So I didn't really know how to deal with this letter. And in my head, I believed that I had met the concerns in the letter even as it had arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know how to respond with a very legal, professional letter.
Right.
And so I thought, if I just write how I am and honestly about the space that I'm in and that I don't know exactly how to deal with this, but then I'm happy to figure it out, then anyone can understand that. And he'll surely reply and we'll be able to solve this. So I wrote a letter that was very, I don't know if it was too lovey, but I was...
Oh, no, you know what? In this world, it can't be too lovey. I mean, that's just perfect. And can we talk about that for a minute?
Sure.
Because this may be the lesson in itself, that when you have to write... you know, and love letters are for anything. We say that all the time, for any reason. And not every letter has to be a love letter or can be, but so many can be.
Right.
And if they can be too lovey,
yeah,
why not?
Well, I think that I have sometimes and I naive or I just sat down and I thought if I really
you had naive you had confidence that being direct and loving would have an effect.
I just felt that there wasn't anything that I was trying to do right. that wanted to harm or obstruct public safety.
Right.
I felt that in my space I was happy to do anything to make it work, and I knew that, and I thought that if I sat down and I wrote a letter that was just yes. earnest and you know, don't be afraid of me, I'm here to
your truth
work with
to
you
paper.
Right,
that's a love letter. Okay,
so I wrote this letter that was very idealistic, you uh-huh. know, I'm a business owner here just trying to write to you as a person and not as some kind of legal document. I'm just letting you know that I'm here because I feel that I want to create a community space and mm-hmm. and that I think shop owners make this neighborhood better. You know, that I care about the outside of my place. I clean up litter. I clean up the walls. I cover graffiti. And I'm not
just
I'm
angel.
Not here to cause problems. So I'm happy to work with you. If you'd like to come into the cafe and talk to me,
and he did,
we could work this out. Well, yeah. So this was actually the beginning of a long line of miscommunications because he didn't come in and he didn't call. And I received another letter with more requests of revising and so on. And mm-hmm. and in the letter, he wrote that he felt it was inappropriate that I had requested to settle the matter financially. So I was very shocked and further put on my guard because that wasn't what I had said. And
didn't sound like it.
And I couldn't believe that he thought I was going to bribe him. Uh-huh. So then the further...
That's
how we took that, huh? So yes, there was further confusion with that. And all this time, you know, this is a very public process. People are asking me every single day about the public seating, and everyone's getting worked up about this. And this is over a period of 3-4 or so months. It was August to December. Mm-hmm. So then I replied and tried to change my plan to accommodate his wish that he had pointed out that there had been a fire escape above uh-huh. a portion of our seating area.
Right.
So I revised the plan so that there was nothing in that area and looked up some codes with the fire department and mm-hmm. all of that mm-hmm. and wrote back that, you know, this with the new plan and everything with photos. And then he wrote back saying that he felt that I was making progress and that he felt that his concerns had been met. But he also felt that it was very important that we have it signed off by a public hearing officer, so further requested a public hearing. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I was feeling that his letters were so cold and that he was putting me through the mm-hmm. mill or something like that. And frankly, the people at the Department of Public Works were also very surprised and said, well, why is there still a problem?
Oh, okay.
So I was egged on by a lot of people to feel a lot of anger towards this person. To think that I didn't understand why it couldn't be solved mm-hmm. and why it had to come to the point of getting a public hearing, because at the time of the request, it was right around the new year mm-hmm. and the public hearing wasn't scheduled till March. Uh-huh. So in all this time, there was, yes, these going on.
So how did it end up?
So the public hearing came around.
Well, you did it.
And we showed up. Very nervous. There were a handful of people, and anyone can show up. It's a public hearing. Uh-huh. We had a handful of supporters, and then there was a handful of people we didn't know. Uh-huh. And I was thinking, uh-huh. who is he? Which one is he? Where is he? And what's he going to say? And then we got called up, uh-huh. and we made our case. And then the public hearing officer called up our protester, uh-huh. and it was like a roll call without anyone on the other end because he wasn't there. And the public hearing officer said, oh, I guess he's not here.
With this very man wasn't there?
Yes.
After insisting on it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So even more anger mm-hmm. and frustration. Mm-hmm. And the people that I didn't know who had shown up happened to be people in the neighborhood who'd never been in the cafe, who just stood up and said, you know, we don't drink coffee, we don't go to the cafe, mm-hmm. but we live on this block and we think that this would be much better for our neighborhood. So nice. That was very heartwarming to hear from people that we had no personal relationship with.
So you got it through because he, by default?
Well, so then at the end of it all, the public hearing officer had nothing to go on except for the letters that I had already received.
Right.
And said, well, I'd like to have another couple of weeks to work this out. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to clear up the fire code, make sure that what you said is true.
Right.
So I said, okay, well, I've waited all this time, I can wait longer. And then the next day, I got a call from Chuck Nevius saying that my publicist had called him and told him about the hearing. And I thought, well, I don't have a publicist. I don't, you know, no one that I knew had called him, but someone from our public hearing had let him know what had happened. So he asked me some questions about it.
So did you ever, just to move on a little bit, did you ever meet this fellow finally?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Okay. So basically what it ended up in is that Chuck Nevius wrote a column about our struggle.
That's what I read. Yes.
Yes. And there was a considerable amount of backlash on this person. And even after I read the initial article, because there were two, and when I read it, I didn't feel good and I didn't feel happy. And I had been very angry for months and months, very upset and couldn't understand why this was happening. And, but I didn't feel good. And people were coming into the cafe saying, yeah, they wrote that article. You know, good job. You're in the paper. And I said, I don't want to be in the paper like that.
Yes.
You know, I may have this problem, but this person doesn't deserve to be called out in the paper and bashed.
Oh, good for you.
So I was feeling really terrible about it when the next week this person came in.
That's what I want to know about.
And so after all this, he came in and I knew immediately when he walked in the door that it was him, even though I'd never met him before. I just knew.
Was he pleasant to you?
Yep. So he walked in and he was very, I don't know if he was nervous, but he was clearly emotional, and he introduced himself, and so I asked him to sit down, and he had written me a letter. Letters everywhere.
Yes, good.
So he'd written me a letter apologizing.
Oh, wonderful.
For everything, and not apologizing for his protest, because that was something he believed in, but apologizing that it had become what it had become.
Good.
And that it had lasted so long, and that it had caused so much trouble. So, and he explained to me a lot of the misunderstandings along the way.
Okay.
And one of them being that he works in this realm. And when I had suggested that he come in and meet with me, he became very nervous and thought that I was setting him up.
Oh my.
And he thought that someone was going to try to catch him in a bribe. So, to me, this is very foreign.
Yes.
But because he deals in this vein a lot, the way that I had phrased it was sort of a familiar code for bribery. So, I didn't know that at all.
Yes, I wouldn't have either.
And
so, we're not going to actually have time to have you sit down like we do so often and write a love letter.
Yes,
as an illustration.
This story is too long.
No, it's not. It's perfect. Because in this story itself, letters have gone back and forth. And exactly, love letters. You were not daunted. You were not pushed into a position of reacting hostily on paper. You took the high road. You wrote something encouraging, apparently more than once. And you explained yourself and put your best self on paper, which is what a love letter can be. And then ultimately, he wrote you a letter of apology, which I consider one of the best kinds of love letters ever.
Yes.
Is a letter of apology.
Yes.
And if it hadn't been for the letters, the love letters, and I'm using that term broadly, then you might not have been in this final, wonderful resolution of this.
Yeah.
So, I, you know, just to ask you, if you were to write one right now, would you consider writing a final love letter to him, saying that you were you're glad that it ended up as it did, and that you now have a friend instead of an adversary?
I think that it would sound more like this. I think in the end, he really took the high road.
Uh-huh.
Considering the amount of backlash that he received.
Yes.
And I won't go into it, but a lot of things that he relayed to me.
Uh-huh.
He had reason to be really mad and upset at me.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't put any blame on me at all.
Good for him.
And I just feel like if I wrote a letter to him, it would be to congratulate him.
Yes.
And to express my awe at his bravery, because I think that it's a really brave thing.
That's wonderful.
When you receive so much hatred to step up and to show your face and not to hide.
I hope you do that. Because first of all, it'd be beautiful for him, for you to do that, because you are clearly the kind of person who's able to express this sort of thing. And what better kind of thing to have in a letter? And the other thing is, you know, we live in a wonderful time where you can make copies of everything. And
yeah.
For you to send him that letter, but make yourself a copy. Keep it in your own treasure box, because your children will see it someday. And they'll learn something really valuable.
Well, in the end, when we were talking, he looked at me very sincerely and said, I love this neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And I have no reason to oppose things that make it better.
Oh, good.
And I really felt that profoundly. And it was, I think it was really important.
Yes.
And I forgave him instantly.
Oh, okay. So, gosh, this is all so lovely. This is just wonderful.
It's so interesting to see how all this conflict can exist because of these just sort of missed connections.
Yes.
And
how they can be resolved ultimately by really clearly written, kind letters.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's easier, you know, if you write a letter, then you're not the one looking at him for a response. He can see it and just take it in on his own time and not be pushed to say something right away.
Yeah.
You know, so that's wonderful.
And he read it out loud to me when he came in.
That's lovely.
I'm
so glad that you came to talk about this with us. I hope all our listeners come away with two things. One is the power of a kindly written, loving letter. And even if you have to do more than one, don't give up. And the other thing is to come into this wonderful cafe. If you're in the neighborhood of Geary and, you know, between Van Ness and Powell and you want something to eat, or it's a wonderful, wonderful cafe. Do you have a website that you want to give? Not yet?
We have a very minimal website.
Why don't you give it?
It's littlebirdcoffeehouse.com.
littlebirdcoffeehouse.com. And I think, in addition to having a morning coffee and a pastry or a sandwich for lunch, to have a chance to meet Chelsea Torres, you will be so uplifted. That in addition, just to have a chance to meet this wonderful woman. So I hope I will see a lot of you at the Little Bird Coffee House.
Thank you.
And thank you, dear, again, for coming to do this with us. I appreciate
you.
It. So for now, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye, and I'll see you next week.